Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drance will be along a little bit later in the proceedings here. I'm broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Just to get you updated on the schedule and everything happening on the show today. Drance, of course, is on the road covering this road trip for the Canucks, traveling today from Washington to Toronto. Of course, they play in Carolina on Friday, but then in Toronto on Saturday. And just with travel complications, logistics, all of that, we'll get Drance on probably for the final segment, either by phone or however it is. So we'll do maybe even just like a little guest hit with Drance in the final segment, 1:30. Up till then, I'll be holding down the fort, but I'll have some guests joining me as well at 12:30. Former NHL player Thomas Hickey, who, of course, now an analyst for MSG Network, for the NHL Network. You saw him on the Amazon broadcast when the Canucks played the Habs earlier this week. So he's all over the place. He's doing some great work in the media. We'll chat with Thomas Hickey about what he thought about the Canucks' performance when he did that game. They played Montreal, again, the Amazon one, and just some of the stuff going around the NHL and his view of this Canucks team as well. And at 1 o'clock, Randeep Janda, color analyst here on Sportsnet 650 for the Canucks, will join me, get his thoughts on another overtime loss for the Canucks last night in Washington. So, no Drance to start the show, but again, Thomas Hickey, 12:30. Randeep Janda at 1, and then Drancher will join us for the final segment. And you can always send your texts in. We always appreciate it, especially when one of us is flying solo. 650, 650, as I mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. But before we go to the text message inbox, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 9th. The headline is, the Canucks lose. Stop me if you've heard this before. They lose in overtime again, this time 2-1 to the Washington Capitals in game two of this road trip. Pierre-Luc Dubois, new villain for Canucks fans, after mixing it up early in the game with Quinn Hughes, pushing him over, somehow dragging Hughes to the penalty box along with him. Hughes was in there for over 6 minutes of game time. Pierre-Luc Dubois scores both goals for Washington, including the overtime winner, as the Canucks get a point, but fall short. They only get half of the available points with yet another overtime loss. Connor Garland scored on the power play for Vancouver late in the second period. And I want to park the overtime loss thing for a second here because I've got more thoughts on it. And I know it's a big talking point around the market today. A lot of reaction from fans, from other hosts on the station here about the constant overtime losses and the loser points that the Canucks are picking up. Yes, it was frustrating. I get that. It is frustrating. It is a frustrating issue watching that. But before we dive into that issue, and Rick Tocchet said it after the game, and it's no surprise here, and he's 100% right. And this is not a case of a coach just desperately looking for positives after his team drops a winnable game. There's a lot for the Canucks to take from that game. And I'm not even doing the thing where it's like, considering the circumstances and who they're missing, they should be happy with how they performed. I don't think you even need to lower the bar like that for this team to be fairly happy with how they performed in Washington last night, for them to be able to find significant things that they can take and hope to carry on from that game and have more success on the rest of this road trip and for the rest of the season. And I mean, let's start with the second period. Second period was maybe one of their best of the season. It wasn't dominant necessarily or anything, but to see them actually pepper a goalie with shots for an extended period of time, right? For the final 10 minutes or so of that period. Man, that was refreshing. That has been so consistently absent in the Canucks game this season. Just those stretches where they look dangerous. They look consistently dangerous. They're consistently testing the goalie. They actually made it to 30 shots. That was nice. Was it 15 games without getting to 30 shots? And look, shots aren't the end-all be-all. We all know you can just fling them from the perimeter and you can rack up big shot totals and it's not going to amount to anything if there's not guys in front, if you're not getting to high danger areas, all of that. That's all true, of course. But it's also true that generally the best offensive teams get a lot of shots on net because they have the puck a lot, because they're capable of getting to good shooting areas. And the Canucks shot totals, is it a perfect metric? No, but it's also a pretty accurate one to sum up their offensive struggles. So just to see a successful game in that category, in that metric, I think that is really important. I mean, how often have we seen stretches like that for the Canucks where they legitimately have the other team under pressure, where it feels like, oh, a goal could be coming any moment here. They're really pushing. They're really pressing. Ultimately, they get the penalty. They get a power play, and they're able to convert on the power play, not on 5-on-5. But that's what happens when you're putting the other team under duress, when you're spending a lot of time in their offensive zone, when you're really testing the defense, testing the goalie. They make mistakes. They give you power play opportunities, and you've got some momentum going in to that power play. Great to see the Canucks able to capitalize on that last night in the power play, although ultimately not able to convert, get the 2 points against the Washington Capitals. So I do think that's significant. And I thought it was really interesting to hear from Rick Tocchet after the game. And he said something that caught my ear, which is basically that he said, yeah, we've spent the last couple of days kind of reevaluating. We're evaluating our team and how we want to play, what we want our identity to be. And I don't think he means, you know, going back to the drawing board with a clean slate and completely rebuilding from the ground up what they want this team to look like, but maybe a little bit more about, okay, let's get back to basics. Let's remember what made us successful last year. Let's see if we can do a little bit more of that. And the one thing I think you can say about this team, and this is a bigger conversation we'll get into later in the show, have the results been frustrating recently? Yes, but the effort has been there. And that effort, that intensity, that was such a building block of their success last year. It's not sufficient. This is not a hard work league. Yeah, hard work is a prerequisite. It's necessary. But if you're just a hardworking team, that's only going to take you so far. You need to build things on top of that. But it absolutely is necessary. Unless you are one of the most talented teams in the league, even in the regular season, it's hard to go very far if you're not working hard on a consistent basis. So I think Rick Tocchet, the reason he hasn't been too critical of his team recently is he's starting to see some of that identity come back. And again, after the game, to hear him say, you know, we've kind of evaluated, thought a lot about what we want our identity to be. I wonder if they can use that evaluation period, good performance against a good team in the Washington Capitals, if they can use that as a little bit of a reset, try to rediscover some of that identity, some of the way they want to play going forward here for the rest of the road trip and for the rest of the season. All right, let's talk about these overtime losses. And I get it. It's frustrating. You're leading the league. It seems like you're in all these winnable games and they should be coin flips. And why the heck do they keep losing? Why can't they win? All these massive defensive gaffes. I completely understand the frustration, but there's some very good news here. Okay. 3-on-3. It's a gimmick. It is fundamentally a gimmick. It's not quite the shootout. Obviously, it's closer to real hockey than the shootout is, but it's not real hockey. We all know that. It doesn't exist in the playoffs. It's not something you have to really worry about your team being good or bad at. Losing a lot in overtime, it's mostly random, first of all. And even if you are genuinely bad at it, well, who really cares? Because it's not like it's going to stop you from going deep in the postseason. It's not this genuine underlying flaw in your team that prevents you from being a legitimate contender. It's a gimmick. It's frustrating in the moment. And yeah, would the season look a lot different if they'd converted, you know, three or four, even more of these, had three or four more points, a little bit more of a cushion, you know, still in the mix for maybe third in the Pacific Division, something like that? Yeah, their season would look a lot different. And I get it. These points add up. And if we're sitting here at the end of the year talking about them missing the playoffs by a point or two, then yes, these overtime losses will look very, very different. But again, right now, I don't really care that they're blowing coverages in 3-on-3. I'm not going to sit here and say that was a good play last night. Obviously, it wasn't. Three guys are chasing the puck in the corner. They leave Dubois all alone in front of the net. That's bad. That's bad hockey. Of course it is. But it also happened in fake hockey, in 3-on-3, something that does not exist in the highest stakes games on the calendar in the playoffs. So it's bad. You don't want to see it. You would love to see a more disciplined approach. But I also don't think it tells us anything about how confident we should be about this Canucks team. It doesn't tell us anything about the true quality of this Canucks team, that they're making mistakes like that in 3-on-3 overtime. So vent, you can get annoyed, I understand, but don't be drawing conclusions. Don't draw sweeping conclusions about this Canucks team just because they're dropping a ton of overtime games right now, not to mention games in the shootout. And it really, like, the shootout is, I think, the important comparison here. Now, we see way fewer shootouts than we used to. But when it used to be a much more common feature of the game, you know, there would be seasons where the Canucks really struggled in the shootout and people will complain. And I get it. But the shootout, we all know it wasn't actually, your team's quality in the shootout had almost no correlation to how good they actually were. 3-on-3, closer to reflecting your actual quality, but still, so far down my list of actual concerns for this team is their 3-on-3 overtime record. So I don't want that to develop into this big talking point. Oh, they're frittering these points away. Yeah, could it hurt them in standings? Absolutely. But 3-on-3 is fundamentally random. It's a gimmick. It's fun to watch sometimes, but it's not a true test of a team's quality in the NHL. 650-650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send in your thoughts about the game last night, about the overtime losses, about whether the team is getting back to their identity a little bit. And I'll throw this question out as well. Maybe I'll have a chance to get to it a little bit later on in the show. But this is something they were talking about on the morning show. Are the Canucks playing well right now? It's a simple question. Are the Canucks playing well right now? We'll say since Christmas. Have the Canucks been playing well? And I know the knee-jerk reaction, and I get it, and maybe I'll even come down on this side, will be, no, they're not. Look at the results. Look at the point percentage. I do think there are some compelling arguments on the other side. So hit me up, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'll read some of the responses later on in the show. I'll weigh in as well. But to pick up on what they were talking about on Halbro this morning, are the Canucks, in your eyes, currently playing well? Have they been playing well since Christmas? Moving on with the broadsheet. And yes, of course, there is stuff to report here on the Canucks, and specifically on Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. Nothing too significant on this front, on the idea of the Canucks shopping or looking to trade one or both of their top six star centers who are both signed to long-term deals. And man, just saying it is such a bizarre situation. And yet here we are. But anyways, Rick Dhaliwal, our pal from Donnie and Dolly, he was on Halford and Brough this morning. He had a couple of tidbits here. And one, you know, Dhaliwal talked about the fact that national insiders, national reporters, Chris Johnson, Elliot Friedman, Pierre LeBrun, they're reporting that, hey, listen, the Canucks are serious about trading Pettersson. Because I think we all hear it here and we're saying, like, come on, really? 4 months into a contract that you just signed, an 8-year deal, and you're all of a sudden you're really seriously shopping this guy? It's just so hard to square. It's so hard to believe. And yet you also have these very connected, very established reporters saying, no, 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 seriously, they're serious about it. And Dhaliwal says, yeah, okay, that's true. They're all saying that. But he's talked to other teams who have talked to the Canucks and feel the Canucks are more interested in trading JT Miller, if they're interested in moving either of them. So again, we have this dichotomy where some of the reporting all points to, well, they're not really serious about trading Pettersson. The logic, I think, of the situation would certainly suggest that. And yet, we keep hearing it from these national insiders that, no, 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 they're really, really serious about it. And then the other note from Rick Dhaliwal, just reiterating how much the Canucks really, really like Braden Schneider of the New York Rangers. And Braden Schneider, I mean, we've heard his name for how many years now in connection to the Canucks and a potential JT Miller deal. And I talked a little bit towards the end of the show yesterday about just why I'm kind of having trouble taking this whole idea seriously that the Canucks are going to trade one of these players. And look, I don't put anything past Jim Rutherford. We know how bold he is. He's not going to be scared to trade anyone, I don't think. But it's still just hard to kind of wrap my head around it. And the Braden Schneider thing is kind of exhibit A for why I'm a little skeptical about this. If you're really serious about trading a player like JT Miller, of course you want the best return possible. But you're also fundamentally changing direction. You're changing the direction of your team if you decide to pull the trigger on a deal like that. So if you're changing the direction of your team and trading a player like JT Miller, are you really going to get so hung up on Braden Schneider? Braden Schneider has a lot to like. First round pick, 6'4", right shot defenseman, mobile. I understand that. But it's not as if he's blossomed into a star in the NHL. He's playing third pair minutes. Will Borgen's been playing over him since he got to the New York Rangers. He doesn't necessarily have the profile of a guy who is poised to break out and become, you know, a top pairing caliber defenseman. I don't have a problem with the Canucks acquiring him. If they did, I think it'd be great. I think he'd be a great piece to have. I just don't think he's the quality of player, quality of potential return that you get laser focused on when you're thinking of trading a player like JT Miller. You're like, oh no, we couldn't possibly do it unless we get Braden Schneider back. Braden Schneider specifically. That doesn't really square to me. And then from the Rangers side as well, you could say the same thing, maybe even more. All we ever hear is, oh, Chris Drury loves JT Miller. The Rangers, they want JT Miller so bad. They think he'd be perfect for them. Well, are you willing to trade your third pairing defenseman? Oh no, we couldn't. We couldn't possibly. Well, then you don't love the player that much. If you're hung up on Braden Schneider, if Braden Schneider is the sticking point between these two teams making a deal for JT Miller, then neither team is serious about making a deal for JT Miller. If they were, one of them would bend on the Braden Schneider point. So I get it. There's a lot to like with Schneider. I'm not trying to put him down or say he's not going to develop into a top four defenseman. All of that, just to say, if you're talking about a guy like JT Miller from either end, the logic does not dictate that Braden Schneider and his availability is a roadblock to getting the deal done. And that's why I think there's still very valid questions about, well, how serious is this? And until I think we start to hear advanced discussions are happening, or they're really locking in on this player, and you know, would team X be willing to give up this guy? And until we start to hear much, much, much more concrete information about a potential deal taking place, I think it's very fair to remain skeptical about the idea of either Miller or Pettersson are going to be traded, certainly in season. The offseason, who knows? Maybe a bit of a different mix, but there's so much time to go between we can get to the offseason, and the landscape, how we view the team, could look significantly different by the time the offseason rolls around. That's the broadsheet. Let's go to the lineup notes for the whiteboard here. A day off for the team today. Of course, they're traveling. They will play in Carolina tomorrow, first of a back-to-back. Toronto on Saturday. And as Rick Dalyall noted as well on Halford and Brough, because it's a back-to-back, there won't be a game day skate in Toronto, which means the dastardly Toronto media's ability to badger players and badger Elias Pettersson and JT Miller with questions. They won't have that ability. So there you go. Lucky break for the Canucks, I guess. Archer Seelovs assigned to Abbotsford by the team today. No corresponding move. So that opens up a roster spot. Of course, they have a couple players on IR right now, Elias Pettersson and Dakota Joshua. Joshua, I believe, still has to miss one additional game as a result of going on IR. Pettersson's eligible to come off anytime. And of course, we heard he was a game time decision yesterday, that he's been cleared to play. Rick Tocchet said in his post morning skate availability that he was going to talk to Petey, figure out if he was ready to go. Obviously not ready to go, but the fact that they're opening up this roster spot, the fact that it was a game time decision, certainly leads me to believe that Pettersson will be ready to go in Carolina. If he's not, that's going to be very interesting. But it certainly seems like the return of Elias Pettersson to the Canucks lineup is imminent, should be tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes. And at that point, now, look, obviously Quinn Hughes has come back in the lineup and he's still dealing with something on his hand. He was fantastic last night, so I don't want to say he's been limited in any sense because he was really, really good, but maybe not quite at the absolute peak version of Quinn Hughes. We'll see what Elias Pettersson, if he's hampered by injuries. But at that point, you know, it'll be Elias Pettersson and Philip Pronek, or sorry, it'll be Dakota Joshua and Philip Pronek who are out of the lineup for the Canucks once Elias Pettersson is back. We'll talk about Pronek in just a second. Thatcher Demko as well, we'll talk about in just a second. And I think you start to get to the point then where the injury absences, it's much harder to use as an excuse or a reason for poor performance, poor offensive performance as well. Again, you want to give him a grace period. Okay, a game, get back up to speed, couple games here or there. But at that point, you've got Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Besser, Jake DeBrusk, all in the lineup. Yeah, your second best puck mover, still not there. We'll see when he comes back. Yes, we know about the offensive struggles from the rest of the blue line. Okay, sometimes situations aren't ideal and you still got to find a way to produce. So what this team looks like once Elias Pettersson is back in the lineup, what version of Elias Pettersson we get, I think that's going to tell us a lot about what to expect for the rest of this season. Because for all the talk about how limited this team is offensively right now because of their personnel, and that's fair, how much has Elias Pettersson really moved the needle for them in the past 12 months? They desperately need another game breaker in the lineup, but he hasn't been that for a while. If he comes back and he is that, that could change the entire conversation around this team. For all the talk of the blue line, for all the talk of the roller coaster and the absences, the most direct way for us to look at this team with a lot more confidence, for us to change how we view this team, the easiest path to that is for Elias Pettersson to be the old Elias Pettersson. And that's why it's always going to be a talking point. That's what they were signing up for. That's what they were expecting when they gave him that deal. And every time he's out there and when he comes back into the lineup, there's going to be those expectations. There's going to be that question of, okay, do we finally start to see that version of Pettersson again? If we do, all of a sudden we're having very, very different conversations about the Canucks, about the ceiling, about what we can expect from them for the remainder of the season. Other notes, as I mentioned, so Seelov's assigned. Good sign, obviously, for Thatcher Demko's availability. They've got this back-to-back coming up. So you got to figure he'll get one of those starts. I think I heard Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly say he would expect Demko Friday against Carolina, get Lankinen some time to rest and recover. Then he'll go Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So very good news. And, you know, we always heard once it was back spasms that it shouldn't be a long-term thing, that it shouldn't be a significant absence for Thatcher Demko. But you really do just want to see him get in the lineup, stay in the lineup, be healthy for a significant stretch of time for more than seven appearances here, just to put some of those concerns to bed. And I'm sure for him as well, to get a run, to really shake off that rust, to get back to that Thatcher Demko level, you got to be in games. You got to be getting reps. You got to be making saves. Good news for Thatcher Demko. And then finally on Filip Hronek, we talked about it yesterday, assigned to Abbotsford on a conditioning loan, and a little bit of surprise there, but Rick Tocchet had a pretty funny reaction actually yesterday when asked if Hronek was actually going to play games for Abbotsford. Basically, no, absolutely not, was basically Rick Tocchet's tone. So he's going down there to practice to get some reps in, especially while the team is on the road here. And the other thing that Rick Tocchet had to say was that, you know what, Filip Hronek, he's working really hard. He's maybe expedited his return a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean he's two games away or anything like that, because usually we see a guy rejoin the NHL team at practice, get some skates in, you know, non-contact jersey, then full participant before they're ready. I do wonder if when they get back home after this trip, if we start to see that cycle, like first practice home or first morning skate home, will we see Filip Hronek with the NHL team? And once that's the case, then you can start looking, okay, sometime in the next week, maybe, could they get Filip Hronek back? So all of a sudden, now we'll see about Dakota Joshua as well. We haven't really gotten an update on that situation, but all of a sudden, on the horizon, they could have their best players in the lineup. Hughes, Pettersson, Miller, Besser, Hronek, Demko. By the end of January, that's a reasonable spot that this team could be in. Will we finally get a stretch of that where we can really dig in and evaluate what this team is, what their ceiling is? Hopefully. Hopefully we can finally get that, because we haven't had a chance yet this year. Quick playoff and standings update. Still a 74% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model at The Athletic. Utah lost in regulation last night. The model still sees Utah as the team most likely to catch the Canucks, so that helps them, and they pick up the point on the road as well, holding steady at 74%. We'll skip the betting odds for today. Of course, they play tomorrow in Carolina. We'll take a break. That's the whiteboard for you today. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll take a quick break here. As mentioned, Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst for MSG, the NHL Network, and Amazon. He joins me next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.